Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop.
Go ahead.
All right, Pop Life Podcast, take 3. Today's, what is this, the 20... Ah, shit.
I think it's the 25th.
I was going to say 27.
But March, yeah, is, right. Is next week. March is next Wednesday.
The Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah, it's over.
Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah,
crazy. Yeah. I don't remember March coming this fast.
Yeah, these first couple of months are kind of blown past pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Can y'all hear me? I'm using different headphones. Can y'all hear me clearly?
Yeah, you clear? Yeah.
Okay, good. I was making sure. Shit, I left my joints. So I got to say peace to bruh loaned me his domicile in Atlanta, here now. You know, I really appreciate it, you know, love him for it. It's a beautiful place, and I'm able to be doing some business down here.
I see a little decor in the background.
Oh, yeah, it's nice, you know? It's nice. It's well set up. It's beautiful. Beautiful building, beautiful gowns. You know? So I had to publicly thank him for that, you know, because, you know, sometimes niggas be funny with that shit. Like, I ain't even say nothing in it. Nah, to thank my man publicly. Yeah, my man publicly for putting me on, you know what I'm saying? I've been kind of out of the loop on the things I kind of need to keep up on because this trip came, like, literally, I left, like, I got the call to come down here for a meeting on Wednesday, on Tuesday. So like I was like, oh shit. And so I left like Tuesday night. So I'm like really out the loop. So this might be a little bit of a shorter show than usual, unless, you know, you guys have some things you want to talk about, but we're gonna do what we do anyway, you know? So how y'all doing?
I don't know.
Yeah. We're gonna get into that the world being upside down.
Yeah.
Hell of a week, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then I know Inka, I definitely wanna, you know, if you have anything to say, I want to let you have some space because, you know,
I do not.
Okay. All right. Well, that too.
But it's like the week is, it's like even the weather in New York kind of matches how crazy the week is. We've had a couple of beautiful spring days. And then like at 1 o'clock in the morning, I was like, is it sleeting outside? Sure enough, we had ice. Did it snow for a couple of hours? Now it's rain. I'm like... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's crazy.
We had about 6 inches overnight.
Yeah.
Late last night, I saw the salt trucks. Uh-huh. So I have a little area over here where they kind of line up and get all the salt. I saw all the lights on. I was like, shit, are we getting snow? And then when I went to the weather app, I saw the rain, and that shit is the worst. Is when you get that frozen rain because if you have weak trees or if you have trees on your property that have been unattended, them shits will crash down, man. They will they will rip power lines. Mm-hmm. It can be really, really bad. And particularly where we are, we're elevated. So you're literally on a hill coming to, you
trying
know,
to
so
come down.
That can, dude, that shit could be disastrous on back streets, man.
Yeah.
So
for sure. My mom was just here this weekend and she drove up in a little bit of an ice storm. And she asked the question, she's like, why don't y'all have any trees around here? Like, there's no trees for the babies to play. And I'm like, because we don't want to die. The wind be blowing the, you know, what is that? The siding off of the house. Like, I know a tree would not make it in my backyard. So
where's some trees for these babies to play in and hang a rope up there as they swing on things?
I don't know what year.
He broke all them motherfuckers. And then they left them back there.
I saw a clip for a new OWN show that I'm going to be tapping into called Will You Marry Me? And this show was about black
nigga.
Folks. Did you see the commercial?
I did. Why are they doing Black History Month like this to us? I don't understand.
The premise of this show
is they have these women, mm-hmm. and they have 3 days to get like a dress venue, like, flowers, all of that.
And the women are going to surprise the man?
On the spot, saying,
on the spot, though. Like, niggas be like,
right now?
Niggas be like in the park with shorts on.
In the dress.
Word.
And from what I can tell, it's like 6 black women and like 1 Asian woman, that are going to be doing this for the show. Yeah. And can we just get through February without one more thing setting us back?
The ignorance.
10 years.
February has been.
Twitter sphere has been absolutely abysmal for black people for the last couple of weeks. And I just cannot anymore.
It really has. But I will be tapping in. I will be watching.
I'm gonna watch with you.
Yeah, exactly. I will be watching. NBA All-Star weekend was weekend pass. It's terrible.
Shout out to Cleveland, Ohio.
I want two more thumbs so I can get that shit 4 thumbs down. It was god awful.
It was awful.
There were some bright spots. I did enjoy seeing the older guys, Jordan, everybody kind of around. That was cool to see.
So I got 2 things I want to say. Okay, the dunk contest is definitely not prime time anymore.
No.
They need to switch that order around, and they need to make the 3-point contest the final prime time game, mm-hmm. right? Because it's really the only thing that is sort of you're like waiting kind of with bated breath, right? Like there's some level of tension that builds up in that. So the dunk contest. So there's 2 things I want to say, man. One, we can't keep getting these one great dunk contest every 8 years. Like that shit is just not it, bro.
No.
And something someone pointed out to me that was really, really interesting was that, and I didn't even really think about it, that these guys have really small hands.
Mm.
And when we think about the dunk contest, right? So a big part of the dunking is you're being able to bounce the ball and really kind of catch it off
and the catch it, yeah, palm it,
and mm-hmm. control it. This is why you see so many missed dunks, because they're not palming the ball. They're grabbing the ball.
Yeah, and they're kind of cupping it.
If you look at the, like, really the great dunkers, like the Docs and the Mike, there's a clip of Mike when he was young in like a street league, and it's literally one bounce. The ball comes up. The next thing you know, it's in his hand and it's moving in every fucking direction you could imagine before he just shatters the backboard. Like big Vince Carter, big hands, can palm the ball, can move the ball. It's just, they have to do that. And really, man, like the antics, like putting on the Timbs it was 20 minutes to get that regular ass dunk. Like we've seen that dunk. Like
a bunch of times.
Nigga, you can go literally right now in a snowstorm, you go to Harlem, you can find a nigga in the bodega getting a chopped cheese, and he can probably do that dunk in his Timbs legit.
Yeah. Like with that's his, not with, an it, with, his North, with his North Face on.
With a North Face on, right? Like, that's so, it was the most basic regular ass dunk. And I'm like, what are we doing here, man? 8-9 tries. Like, my nigga. You get 2 shots, bro.
Yeah.
You miss on the first goal. You miss on the second goal.
Go out of here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're getting zeros. Because you said it'd be like 10 attempts.
Even Doc looking aggravated. Like he, you know, Doc is 75, man. Doc needs to take his medication, you know, before 10 p.m., nigga.
Yeah,
clip of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar leaving after that young man missed that dunk. It's the best thing I've ever seen. Kareem, I think I laughed for like
Kareem was just strolling out like
he had his jacket on.
Like when you leave church early because the pastor going too long or something. He was so casual, put his coat over his arm.
Kareem is legitimately 70. I might have been exaggerating on Doc. Doc might be closer to 70, but Kareem is legitimately 75 years old.
Absolutely.
There's no 8:30, I'm out. Come on, them old heads, they was gone. That's why,
and it was late. It was late when the dunk contest started. It was like 10 something.
That's my point, fam. It's like if it's like 10 o'clock, like that's super late for guys like that.
You know what I'm saying? It's on East Coast time because it was in Cleveland this year, so it wasn't like West Coast delay. It was 10 o'clock for real, you know. So yeah, it was awful. They got to do a lot of rejigging. I still don't understand why they don't like go to YouTube and stuff and then pull some guys who can really dunk who might not.
Same thing I said.
It's pretty, but there's some guys that can really get down. Yeah, they're not in the league, but you know, you put up some money for these guys, guys who you know could use shit $500,000 to be amazing.
I do want to say in fairness. That when we watch those YouTube clips, that we are watching the clip, which True. Is the best. Now,
like, we don't know how many attempts and all
how
that.
How many tries these niggas are doing?
Yeah,
before they get there. But I do agree that they need to figure this out. I personally would love to see a Legends game to come back. There used to be a Legends game.
Yeah, it used to be.
And I remember one year that Legends game, like. Five niggas pulled up with their hamstrings like tight and had to limp off and yeah. They deaded the Legends game. But like it would be great to see say a guy like Chris Webber or guys who are still in shape, Rasheed Wallace, guys who can still hoop
Ray Allen, you know what I'm saying?
Guys that have been out of the league, if you've made a couple all-star appearances, you know, if you've been in the league for a certain amount of time, have them come and who would not want to see AI out there?
Exactly. Yeah. So they need to do something, man. So figure it out.
Very good, by the way. I got to get my black auntie on and say, these young men are holding up very nicely.
They're using good lotion.
Sorry, I'm just saying, Xers age better than Xers and older millennials. We age better than everybody.
Thank you for including me.
I don't know what these 30 and 35 and under people doing.
They're doing drugs.
Hard drugs.
And a lot of hookah. And they don't drink water.
And niggas are on dope and don't eat no vegetables.
And drink Mad Hennessy.
I don't think it was a regular thing in my 20s for me to not get more than 5 hours of sleep per night. I don't know why these people, and I look younger than half these. I just don't. Okay, I just had to add that. That's all.
I want to mention, I don't know if I'm saying her name right. Correct me if I'm wrong. Hey, Ivy. I'm saying it all wrong. Ketanji Brown Jackson. I believe that's her.
Who's the
nominated for Supreme Court Justice, first black woman ever. Happy for her.
I'm happy for her, but also I'm praying for her because Mitch is about to be on his bullshit.
Of course. They're gonna track down the nigga that she kissed under the bleachers in high school.
Well, apparently she has a brother who did a life sentence for possession for like cocaine possession with intent. So I don't know. I gotta look that up.
Yeah, but that ain't got nothing to do with her. But anyway,
I know they're gonna be on the bullshit.
They're gonna be on the bullshit.
One of the only nominees in recent history who has any kind of experience with being a defense attorney. Right. She worked with the Guantanamo detainees. She's done a whole lot.
So she has the resume. Graham,
who is an asshole, approved her or voted to confirm her to the DC. District Court. So I don't know why he's all of a sudden, you know, up in arms that she's getting nominated to Supreme. So
because Lindsay's a bitch. Exactly. But here's what the Dems got to get this shit together. And I'm not gonna spend too much time on this. The way that they muscled Merrick Garland through, and especially Amy Coney Barrett. Like they pushed Amy through in a fucking month.
And Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh, too, they pushed you quick.
Them's mm-hmm. got to fucking get with it. They got to fucking get with it. Like, you got, like, I know they be go high, go low, whatever the fuck. No, get.
Nah,
get,
time to get, go lower.
Get on that playground shit. Because time this is what, historically, this fucks us every single time. Is that Dems work with, working good faith. And they play fair. Mm-hmm. And the GOP plays dirty and it fucks us every single fucking time.
They're more concerned with the perception than the actual accomplishment.
Right.
And I want them to get out of that mode and I want them to stop, you know, like you said, that high road shit. That shit is grossly overrated. And honestly, we playing for keeps, bro. Like this isn't
mm-hmm. that's the point.
Yeah. If there was ever a position to draw a line in the sand and fight dirty and do whatever you need to do, it is right now. And if you can't, if you don't think that that's the case, then that's the even bigger issue.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're pulling for you, Judge Jackson. Come through. I don't know much about her background. I don't know what you went to school and all that type of stuff. I got to kind of dig in a little deeper, but she obviously has the credentials and the qualifications to do the job. You just got to.
I think she came through Harvard.
Okay.
I'm still doing research because it just happened Harvard, a few minutes
Harvard
ago.
Harvard undergrad. But,
yeah.
Okay.
Harvard, Yale, that kind
of. Okay. Okay. The Ivy League thing.
Yeah, she
okay.
got the pedigree.
Oh yeah, I'm sure she's tight.
And she has the Stillax. Shout out to her.
Yeah, and she's cute.
Tired about that. She's and she's cute.
which is important. I've talked about this before, but I got a little pet peeve because I'm seeing it just more and more and more. The mixed couples in commercials, it's like at an all time high. And look, love is love, and you know, but there's obviously. I don't know if there's some type of research going on, but there's a reason for this many commercials with black men, and it's usually black men and white women nowadays.
Yeah.
And yeah.
There, well, the research is, this is the way that brands are being. So it's a couple of things, and I don't have hard data on hand to back this up, but you're not the only person noticing, and this is actually a conversation that's happening even within the advertising industry.
And sure. And
what it is is this seems to be, I'm going to say seems to be, this seems to be a way that brands are trying to appear more diverse to a multicultural reality without just showing completely black families. And the sticking point with that is that it seems like agencies are so used to black family means we're just targeting a black audience, right? Because that's what they've done for so long. We have a black version of the commercial. We have a main, quote unquote, mainstream.
The McDonald's black commercial.
And we have a Latino version of the, a non-white Hispanic version of the commercial, right? Mm. So to break out of that, though, it's like they can't wrap their minds around, you can have a commercial with a black family and that be your primary commercial for the full demo, right? Mm-hmm. So they go with multiracial. And it is challenging because some people are like, oh, it reflects the change of the world. It's like, not at that extent. Not if your percentage of the interracial couples that you're showing outpaces the actual number of black families that you're showing. That's not a realistic showing. So I think it's their attempt to be diverse, but there's still a, I don't want to say blind spot because that's ableist, but they're still overlooking, you know, mm-hmm. the obvious. I'll say that.
Yeah. I see it. I mean, it's so prevalent right now. It's like, damn, man, everybody's, and then of course, you know, and y'all know me, and it still irks me because they get the kids wrong. I'm like, well, whose kid is that?
One of the things I would be interested to see is that percentage, has that percentage of commercials relative to the number of commercials being done, has that increased versus are you simply seeing more of those ads because ads have increased, meaning you have more content right now. Like, remember, like, we old enough to remember TV going off, right? Like, there was only but so many commercials, right? And you had a specific ad campaign that might have run for a quarter or 6 months. And that's really not the case. And now a lot of these ad campaigns are really sort of running for very specific projects or specific items. And so I think that what you're also seeing is an increase of volume in the commercials that we're seeing we're consuming content in that way.
You're so watching a lot more.
Like you, right? Like you might see a commercial because you're on YouTube. You might see an ad on YouTube. You also might see an ad on Weed. You might see an ad because you watch an OWN. You might see an ad because, you know, so just how, you know, there used to be five channels, right? So I just think that the content, the ability to have those commercials is so much broader now.
Yeah.
Which is why you're seeing, and you know, they're not as over the top anymore, right? Like, you don't see a lot of overproduction and a lot of, you know, you'll see those obviously here and there, but a lot of these commercials are shot at somebody's house. Mm-hmm. That they rented for a day or two, And they're really quick and simple commercials.
Yeah.
I think I started noticing this in the beginning of the pandemic when we were just home watching TV we hadn't seen in a long time. So could be a little bit of both. I think there is definitely a lot more interracial couples that are in advertising. But I do think, like, I literally have not seen just a Black couple trying to sell me Cheerios or just a Black couple in a Tahoe going somewhere. Like, I don't think it exists.
I've seen a Black couple trying to sell me Cheerios. I think, I don't actually think it's been a couple. I think maybe it's like a daddy and a daughter, or it's like, you know what I'm saying? But it's, but it might, but it's on, like, cause I'm watching something Black. You know, I've seen Nelly trying to sell me some Cheerios. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah,
like,
I think
part of the thing is really like, you know, agencies, first of all, you know, they didn't start multicultural departments till the fucking 90s. And, you know, they've been segmenting out for so long that I just think they're still really kind of grappling. Some do better than others, but they're still just really grappling what, you know, presentation looks like. Because we really just have lived in a world where it's like, you see the white family in the McDonald's, you see the Black family in the McDonald's.
Then you see Calvin. Then you see Calvin in his job.
You know, Calvin. You know,
Calvin.
You know what? That commercial was actually terrible.
It was awful.
Fucking neighborhood. So glad. So proud of Calvin.
So good. The Calvin over there.
Calvin got a job.
Okay. Can we put some context to Calvin getting his job, though? Right? We were on the back end of the crack era.
This is true.
So it was very refreshing for those old women to see Calvin going to work and not hovering around on the corner.
They take his backwards cap and spin around. And if he hit McDonald's hat, he's popping in his McDonald's
hat. Word. He's like, Calvin got a job.
Calvin, hot stepping in McDonald's hat.
I want to say old commercials. I gotta shout out Ivy, because when I let her watch YouTube, you know the shit she watches is like the old old Coca-Cola commercials that's like always Coca-Cola.
Like, when they were
something
singing
cool
all that
shit. Is coming out of her iPad all the time. It's always some vintage like Sesame Street song or
Train Up
like,
a Child. Really, you did good. You did
don't
good.
Fuck with the Alpha and the Z generation at right. all. Like, she's love watching that. Boomer shit and I stand.
Raise them up right. I want to say real quick piece to, I don't even know the woman's name, but I saw the clip that went around with the news reporter whose mom rolled up on him on the job.
Hey, Dee Dee.
Then she said to the cameraman, hey, Deidre. You know, he's like, mom, you are my
son. The way that would be my mama. And then he's like, this is, points to the cameraman, you ain't say hi to him. She's like, hi, DeAndre. Like, what? It's like, I was like, this would
like,
be normal.
Come on, you holding up traffic.
The way see he threw his hands up, like, oh, mom, God. You know,
Sister Jones and Miss Edna is so sick of her shit talking about that boy.
You see and him meeting, on TV? I gotta go
gathering.
Check on my baby.
She's trying to set that boy up with every gal.
Oh my God.
He's on TV. Look at him. He's here too. You can just turn to Channel 6. He on there every night.
Jackie's daughter just graduated. She always this. Jackie likes it.
You just came home. You need to go
home
and see about
it. She said, I always liked her. She's a nice girl. You know, so
I just wanted to come down there and make sure you okay, because you know people crazy, baby.
People's crazy out here. I was in the area. I just wanted to make sure you was all right.
I was going
up to her all tonight.
Caballo.
You know, they called me. They see me on the Facebook.
That's so Black. The one
godmother
said
she saw you on TV
week,
yesterday.
Too. I seen you on the Facebook. Everybody talking about it. I want to mention this. We could do the what you're watching, but I want to do a little spin on that. What you're watching, which is a YouTube thing. I'm close to the edge, close to the end of the internet. So I found this pocket, and it's fascinating.
Oh, God.
There's a pocket. No, this is good. It's a good thing. There's a pocket of kids, and I mean kids, like teenagers and, you know, like kind of young teenagers, 15, 16, 17, 18, who are watching. There's a thing where they are watching Michael Jackson, well, the Jackson 5 clips and reviewing them. So you got these 16, 17-year-old kids watching, like, the Jackson 5 when they did like the Ed Sullivan show or the Carbonette right. show. And it's fascinating because it's almost like they're seeing an alien because they don't know that Michael Jackson.
Right.
They know
right,
Michael right. later Michael, like Thriller and right. they don't know the kid Mike, you know, the black Mike.
Which can and I interject and just say Xers and below, we have, I don't know if we've talked about this on here, but I talk about Twitter a lot. We drop the ball somewhere because
yeah, we don't pass it down. We don't pass it down,
but it's not intentional. The reason we don't pass it down is because it doesn't occur to us to pass it down because the way we grew up, we just got shit by osmosis. A, mm-hmm. it wasn't but so much content you could watch, right? B, you had physical albums, like all of us used to look mm-hmm. through our parents' albums, be taken in by the artwork, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You had magazines laying around that you were flipping through. So you had an idea of who people were and what they looked like, right? And like there were a lot, we were watching network television. So we were seeing old movies, we were seeing, you know, shows in syndication, and we were watching music videos, right? The thing about streaming and of all kinds is that it's an algorithm. So you are fed more of what you already watch.
Yeah, exactly. You're not fed right? no new shit, no new right. undiscovered shit.
So between the closing of brick and mortar stores, because how many times did you just stumble across some shit because you were just in the music store, and us converting physical products to digital so that your kids aren't rifling through your shit and stumbling upon something that they want to listen to or look at or read. And then like, again, just no music videos on TV and there being so much content for people to pick from. I think it hasn't occurred to us that like, we got to really be conscious in the effort to like share shit, right? Mm-hmm. And have a little bit of like school and shit. So we got to get on that because we can't be mad at what these kids don't know when they don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know.
Because even in these videos, kids will ask questions that you would assume, again, I would assume that people know. They're like, well, who's the youngest? Right. I wonder if his brothers taught him to dance like that. And they'll be like,
why did almost 50 years ago.
I know, but we got to remember that.
The Jackson 5 was almost 50 years ago.
That we're missing though is like we didn't have a choice in what we wanted to listen to growing up. I know in my house we didn't. I couldn't touch the radio in the car or
not in the car. I had my own little Walkman, but with my Walkman on, I could hear whatever the fuck they was doing. Like it wasn't right.
And even that, my mama bought the CDs, so it wasn't like I could just. Yeah.
I think it's interesting to note that you're saying that it was 50 years ago because we do have to put a little bit of perspective on that mm-hmm. in that them watching those clips would be like the equivalent to us in the 80s watching like fucking Fats Domino, right? Like it's right. just so it kind of crosses generations for us. Like we can remember that because we really saw basically almost every iteration of Michael. Exactly. Right. And so it's all connected for us, but I can totally understand why it would not be connected. Like, you know, unfortunately, you know, Mike dies in 2009. Right. You know, if you're a 20 something year old kid, you're like fucking nine.
You don't even really understand, you're not even grasping that.
Right. Yeah. So again, it is upon like, listen, my kids, again, I always say, you know, it's a little unfair because they would be in the car with me and I would always play sort of oldies, and, you know, mm-hmm. just like they're very familiar with music. And again, because they play, I would specifically give them music to sort of listen to. So like I heard Jordan one day singing all the words to Alicia Myers. I want to thank you.
I want to thank you. Yeah.
It was second nature to her to sing that song. And then I was about to say, where did you, like, I didn't know you had that song. And then I realized, of course she has that song because she's been in the car with me.
You played in the car.
Probably been in her head since she was three.
Yeah. Same with me. There's so much music I know through osmosis because I grew up, my stepdad was an audiophile. Like he still had like the old school reel to reels. And his music collection was like mind-blowing. And, you know, my mother was a huge music fan, so I grew up listening to everything. And there's stuff that I don't even realize I know until I hear it. Mm-hmm. And I just know, like, when we went to see Fela the Musical, I knew everything. I knew all of it. And I knew some Fela. I didn't know how much, because they were huge Fela fans. I knew
still all of it. Playing it all the time.
Yeah, I knew all of it. So, and this was before motherfuckers was sampling Fela and doing all, like, because, you know, that the Fela the Musical kind of brought him back into, like, current musical culture. But, like, I knew all that shit. And I was like, wow, I didn't know how well I knew this. And it happens everywhere. It happens with jazz. It happens with yacht rock. It happens. I'd be like, I know this music, right? So I just think, yeah, we all have our own little entertainment silos. And we have to be more cognizant of that, because I think the other thing we don't realize is that those of us who remember what it was like to not have the internet to find stuff are, like, fascinated at the fact that people who only know that wouldn't go look for everything. Like,
but see, but that, but
why would you not go search for everything? And it's because we know what it's like.
But that's my point. My point is that there's these bunch of kids that are doing that. And it's interesting to watch them. Again, they ask some questions that they didn't know because they're 17 or whatever. But it's just so fascinating to watch them watch Michael, because it's like, damn, I didn't know, like, this guy's fucking amazing. This kid, right. They're always like, he was like 10 doing this shit, like singing right. like this. How could he even, like, they're like kind of discovering, in other words, they kind of got the second part. They know the second part of the book, but now
they're getting the origin story.
First part, they're getting the origin story now, and it's blowing. It's just interesting to watch because, you know, Michael was, you're never seeing that again. He was, you know.
Yeah, we're never seeing that again, ever. Yeah,
he's a singular talent, especially at that age. So, like, they're just tripping. It's just to see them, like, bouncing to, like, ABC and I Want You Back, and, like, they're just like, you know, and these live vocals, this one, and so on. Yeah. They're just like, wow, like, I didn't, you know, this is incredible to watch. I've even seen a kid, there's another guy.
They also haven't, sorry to interrupt, they also haven't grown up on male kid groups the way we did. So that is probably even more, like, fascinating, because that hasn't existed for the past 20 plus years in any iteration.
So they tripping on the dance steps and the way they're dressed, and they're like, oh, this is so fly. And there's a couple of the kids who are, like, doing, like, I saw a guy kid doing, like, Anita Baker. He was doing, like,
remember a couple of years ago, kids were doing, like, Whitney Houston and
they're, like, listening and, like, wow, this song is dope. Like, it's so there is a pocket of kids out there that are, like, really, like, listening to the oldies, and you can go on internet and find it. And then just lastly, before we go into the thing, I got the another old man moment. I was with my artist Tuesday, whatever day matter. And we were listening to something my producers did, and he sampled Luke. And she was like, who was that? I was like, oh, that's Luke. And she was like,
Who is Luke?
Who? I was like, Luke, you know, Luke.
Right.
Like, what? I was like, look, you don't know who Luke is? You just assume.
We assume because we don't realize
that Luke records are 30 years old now.
Damn near 40. And I think for us, the other reason it's hard for us to realize is because the alienation between our parents' stuff and our stuff was black and white versus color, right? So it's like there was, like, this demarcation between oldies and current. And I think for us, we've never, like, people listening to 90s stuff now is like us in the 90s listening to, like, funk and even going back to the Motown era. Actually, at this point, it's like us going back to the Motown era, you know? So, and which is also hard for me to grasp. The 90s was 30 fucking years ago, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, yesterday, I posted a clip. I made a joke about Nelson from Boomerang. Tom Ford has these two lipsticks. Shades. One is titled Age of Consent. One is titled First Time. And somebody was talking about how horrible these titles were. And I said, they don't let Nelson handle the branding without supervision again, right?
Excellent tweet, by the way.
And a couple people got it. But then I realized, I was like, let me post. And then somebody was like, I'm singing a Kiss Bow right now. And I had posted that tweet. And then I was like, let me post the clip of him playing that Kissable video. Cause I had said, I was like, that kiss me once, kiss me twice, played immediately in my head. So I posted the clip. And this one girl was like, a woman was like, she was like, this is before my time. She was like, what movie is this? And,
Boomerang and I was checked 91, her
bio. She's 31. And I was like, it's Boomerang, but you're the same age as Boomerang. Like, you know, yeah. I didn't even trip. I was like, you're the same age as Boomerang. But it's crazy that like 30-year-old people are the same age as Boomerang. Like, I just got to remember that. I keep having to tell in my head, like, I have to associate the time gap. Because none of that feels that long ago.
Well, I'm gonna tell you the one thing that I've seen more than one kid say, which is so interesting, and I'll move on. So I've seen kids do the I Want Your Back, watching the Jackson 5, and they're like, this is the song from Daddy Daycare. Because that's how they associate the song. Jackson 5 doesn't even exist to them. This is the song from Daddy Daycare. This is the song from Daddy Daycare.
But I get that with Grand Theft Auto a lot for...
Everything.
They'd be like, this is Grand Theft Auto. Okay. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So anyway, let's move on. So I just got one watch out what I'm watching, and then I'll let y'all jump. I'm watching Love is Blind, but you know me, I'm going to go left. So I'm watching Love is Blind Japan. Because there's a Love is Blind Japan, there's a Love is Blind Brazil, and then there's obviously the U.S. version. So I actually started watching Love is Blind Japan, and it's just fascinating to me because, you know, you're watching, it's the same concept, but we're watching it from a different culture's perspective. So these Japanese, I don't know, kids, because they don't think 30-something, but they're young, and they're trying to find love. But it's just interesting to watch them interact, because it's obviously not the same as Americans. They're very, like, studious, for lack of a better term. When they go into the pods, they all have notebooks, and they're writing several notes, like, about...
They do that in the U.S. show, too.
Yeah, I know, but they're just kind of, like, they're not even, like, very... It's like when one... Because they have a couple of them have cracked on the man and the woman side and have gotten emotional, but it's almost like shocking to see them emotional because they're not in an openly emotional culture.
But
it also makes me pay attention more because you have to read the subtitles.
Right.
You can't like just kind of like listen in the background. You got to like lock in. There's two people on there that worked in the States, so they speak English, and every now and again they'll speak English back and forth to each other, but the rest of them are from different parts of Japan, and they're trying to find love. But you know, it also surprised me that a few of them only have been like married and divorced. I wasn't expecting that from the Japanese culture. Like, I got married at 21, and I got
it's changed a lot in the past 20 years, actually. The pandemic, actually, Japan was the first person to report, in part probably because they went on lockdown differently than we did earlier than we did. They were the first person to start reporting divorce stats coming out of the pandemic. I mean, like really heavy divorce stats. So yeah, I think Japanese culture has definitely changed a lot over the past 20 years, especially. I said I was going to do Brazil and or Japan. Today is the season finale of Love is Blind is up now. I was waiting until we finished taping to watch it because they don't stress me the fuck out this season.
I'm gonna get to America.
There's only two couples. There's only two couples I halfway believe in, and the way it's edited, one of them, the editors put in the show with one of them, with each of them at their little bachelor and bachelorette nights, the editors put in the show that each of them, like, I'm 100% saying yes. And I was like, oh, they're definitely not getting married if they put that in. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're definitely not fucking getting married. And the black couple, I'm concerned about because I like them, but I think they might be too different. And I don't know if they're going to make it. So
I don't want Ayana to marry him. I don't. She's never going to, as an only child, she's never going to get over being his second choice.
Yeah, she's not. And also, I just don't think, well, you don't watch it, Jerry, but the one of the girls who...
Well, watched last season. That's how it started this season.
Yeah, the one black couple, the girl is very, and she's super cute. She's very introverted. And she has abandonment issues. Her mom kicked her out the house at 18. Her godparents adopted her as an adult adoption, which is another topic we need to get into.
I hate that shit. I hate that. I hate that that's a thing. I mean, I don't know about other communities, but in our community, 18, you getting out of my house. Like, It's like, yeah. Yo, 18 is a child,
You're a
yo.
A child.
And then again, when some shit goes left and, you know, God forbid something happens.
The parent needs something.
They're like, oh. Family. It's like, yo, you kick the child out the house to fend to their own devices. Well, I've heard so many people over the years mention that. I had to move out when I was 17, almost like it was a badge of honor. It's like, that wasn't really fly.
My stepfather was like that. My stepfather, when I left for college, my stepfather was like, you're never moving back here, which I didn't. I didn't plan to. But my mother was like, don't tell her that. You can always come back craziness. Home. She was like, well, I didn't go back home. And she was like, we ain't you, nigga. Like, exactly. No, you can always.
I'm so glad my mama was never like that. Like, I left the like, team because I had to get the fuck out of there. But my brother still lived there when I left.
Right.
Yeah,
it's so like,
that's why a lot of these girls.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's a lot of,
like,
a lot
of competition these, or some shit.
A lot of these girls end up with like dating like a 38-year-old because they need somebody to fucking take care of them.
They're, exactly.
You know, or the dudes end up doing dumb shit.
But so anyway, her godparents took her in and adopted her, but due to that, she clearly has some abandonment shit with her, and she also she's very introverted. So the dude that she got engaged to is very extroverted. Like, he's everybody's homie. He's the favorite. He's very outgoing. He's like, he's the one who's like, drinks for everybody, let's go. You know, he's the one who's gonna rally the troops and everything, and he's very flirtatious. Right. And he's a PK. His family is lovely. His parents and his sister are lovely. He clearly knows like strong family values and stuff. So he makes her feel protected on one side, but also not completely safe on the other side, because like he'll offer her to come out with him. She doesn't really want to. So he's out kicking it. Not necessarily cheating or anything, but she's just like,
but when she does go out with him, does he hold her down?
She doesn't.
She never goes out with him.
I mean, it's only been a couple of weeks, so we don't have a lot of examples. But you know, one of the last episodes, he was like, I'm not gonna keep doing this. I know I can't live like a single. It's almost like he's trying to get his last shit out, like, let me be out with my boys type joint. And she's like, it's cool. Like, I'm not saying you can't go out, but like, you can't go out three nights a week and be out till like 3 o'clock in the morning, you know? And he's like, no, I know that. He's like, I know that. So when she brings up a concern, he doesn't dismiss her. He doesn't try to like minimize what she says. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't do any of that. So it's like, he's confusing to some people, because I've seen a lot of women be like, I don't trust him either. But I know his personality type. I like, my friends are his I have a lot of friends who are like his personality type. And I'm like, I get him. I just don't know if she can handle him. Cause he's a lights, camera, action nigga, right? So like, if you with that kind of dude and you're not that kind of chick, it's always going, you never going to feel like 100%. Cause you're always going to be wondering if if he's really into you, if he's into other people, which is why like flirting has never made me jealous at all. As long as motherfuckers know you coming home to somebody, because I'm a flirt. So, but everybody's not like that. So
I'm not like that.
Yeah, he's talking to you. It sounds
just like be clear. I'm not like
that.
I don't listen. Care. I don't want you up in nobody's face, especially at the mixer in Mexico where he had that whole conversation with Mallory.
We would have been done right then.
Absolutely.
You doing too much sniggling and giggling?
There was.
You shitting and grinning up in somebody's face. I was really upset. Does not make you feel secure.
Everybody had been drinking. So there's the whole drama, for lack of a better word, is that he, you know, the people in the pods get close very quickly, and it's like a dating thing. So folks may get down to, you know, there's like two people they're trying to decide between. But the thing about Love is Blind that people might argue is still, it's like unconventional, but still conventional, is that ultimately the man makes the choice who he wants to propose to, right? The women just have to say, I'm into you, you're my number one, you're whatever, kind of signal. So we have two situations this year where we have one where a woman was torn between two people, and two where women were torn between two people, two where men were torn between two people. And Jarrett was one of those. So he asked one chick, if I were to ask you to marry me, would you say yes? And she said no. Now, he didn't ask her to marry him, but he said, if I were to ask you to marry me, would you say yes? And she said no. It was her and the Latina and the Black girl. So when the Latina said no, she wouldn't, he asked the black girl, but he told the black girl first. And to his credit, he told the black girl first. I asked Mal.
So the black girl's a second choice.
That she
but like after after Mal said no, though, he was crying all night in the pod.
Upset. He was really upset.
I think Ayana watches this back, and she's like, I would be devastated at his reaction to her saying no.
I already knew that when Ayana watched that Mal footage back, so that when the first time all of them got together, now he has said on camera in confessionals to the other castmates that once he got with Ayana, and it's true, as soon as he saw Ayana, like, completely clicked, instant energy, he has said over and over again, I'm happy with who I'm with. I have no second thoughts. I have no regrets. I'm happy with who I got. Her parents love him. I mean, his parents love her. Well, her godparents like him, all of that. But the first night that all of them got together to hang out, which was the first time he saw the girl who said no in person, right? The two of them had this whole like little side conversation, and it seemed very intense. It was very like, he ain't get you the ring you want though. I wouldn't have done that. You know, so both Ayana and the person that the girl chose, her name is Mallory, and the person Mallory chose were like thrown off by that. So that's why a lot of people throughout the rest of the season has been like, I don't know with them. Like, I don't know. I like them. I feel like, I think all these people need therapy. And the one thing Married at First Sight does, even though they don't do it well, is they at least have some kind of, they have a pastor, they have a relationship therapist, they have, even though they do a poor job, but at least they have them. These people are supposed to get married 3 weeks after they meet. They need that shit because this is like a crash course in getting to know another person. So like the fact that they don't offer them any kind of counseling, any kind of, you know, conflict mediation, like they need something to help with this shit. Because there's one girl, like she has insane insecurity. Like, I don't like calling any women crazy. She's crazy. And she knows she's crazy. Like Jeffrey, you want to talk about watching somebody create a fight out of thin air? Like you watch her do it. She will find something and turn it into a fight. And it's like, what,
and then gaslight the nigga's reaction, like, why are you reacting like this?
She like, was like,
pull something out of thin air, you crazy mother.
Like, she started an argument. She started an argument with him. Everybody had to meet the families. They meet her family, so they're talking afterwards, and he's like, today went really well, but blah, she's like, I know. She was like, it was so important for me that, you know, you meet my family. But, you know, when we got in the car, and I was talking so much about how happy I was that my family liked you. You know, you didn't seem as happy that my family liked you. And he was like, well, I was kind of concerned because there was some stuff going on with my friends and my family that you know, I was having to respond to, like, was texting and everything. And she's like, oh, so I mean, this is most important day for me. And I'm so, you know, it's so important that my family likes you, but all you want to talk about is your family. And she keeps harking on that. He's like, no, things were still going on. I'm sorry. But like, that was on my mind. Of course, I'm happy that your family liked me. She's like, but you weren't as happy. Like, you didn't seem to care. You just want to talk about your family. He's like, yo, the world does not revolve around you. And she's like, how could you say that? How could you even say that the world doesn't revolve around me? I don't even know what to think about that. I mean, how are you saying like your family is more important? But when I say that, the world, like, literally, she just fabricated this shit out of the sky. And I was like,
they've had more arguments on the show. Like, it is insane to watch.
It's crazy. So where we left off last episode was them at the altar. Her, for once, calm. I also think he's gay, but her, for once, calm and settled. I do. Her, for once, calm.
That's just because he's messy as hell.
He's so messy. And him, he's very fastidious. Him, like, looking really, you know, disconcerted. Last, I don't think we have a runaway bride like we did last time, but.
That was crazy.
Yeah, I'm ready to watch the rest of this shit because they have taken me through it. And the couple that I didn't believe at all is the one I'm rooting for the hardest.
I love them, Natalie.
Shane and Natalie. I actually really fucking like them. When Natalie's mom is Shane, When Nally's mom and Shane's mom were together, I was like,
oh, that was sweet.
Oh my God, they're so cute. And that's the couple, both of them were like, I'm 100% saying yes. And I'm like, oh, fuck.
My therapist, we did our check-in this week, and she's always like, have you thought about harming yourself or wished any harm on anybody this week? And I was like, listen, Shayna on that beach is about to get her ass whooped virtually by me. Because
Shepherd, you got to catch up on this. We need you in this conversation.
I'm watching.
You will be all over this situation. We'll move on because we spent a lot of time, but it's like, it's a lot. What are we watching? Because I got a show, I think.
Yeah, what are you watching real quick?
So it's only on its third episode, so I don't know if it's going to be weird enough for you yet, but on Apple Plus, there's this show called Severance.
Oh, yeah, I've been seeing people talking about it.
Yeah, it's so in the show, there's a company, which I guess is a tech pharma company. We're never really clear on what they do. And it employs, I guess, like half of the town that it's in. And there are certain levels of the company at which you can volunteer to take what's called a severance. And what it means is that you volunteer to have like a implant embedded somewhere in your system that as soon as you walk through the doors of the building, you forget everything about who you are outside of work. And as soon as you leave the building, you forget everything about what happens inside of work. So you are split into two consciousness. And they call it like your innie and your outie, or your worky and your whatever. And it's really weird because the outside you is only conscious of being like walking into work, walking out of work. You have no, like your awareness only exists of outside the office. But the consciousness inside the office has no conception of being anywhere but inside the office. So like a worker really feels like maybe they're stuck there, like they never leave there, like they've never been anywhere else but there, right? So we're slowly discovering, like it's unfolding really slowly, like revealing more and more about what the program does, how it works, what it means. The main character that we're following, his wife died, and that's one of the reasons he opted for severance, because he felt like it, like not being able to remember her for half of his day would make his life easier. But you know, there's one person who like left the program, and something's happening where that work life and home life are starting to merge together. It's fucking his head up. There's one woman who, and everybody has to do this videotape statement that says like, I agree of my own volition. I'm voluntarily going through severance and I understand this means X, Y, Z. And they show it to you the first day that you wake up, you know, at work. This one girl, she's trying her best to like escape. She's trying to sneak messages out to herself that say, quit the job, you know, all this other shit. So we're starting to learn what exactly this company
it sounds like some Black Mirror shit.
It's Black Mirror-ish. It's definitely Black Mirror-esque. And the other thing is I finally started Bel-Air. It's amazing.
Yeah, I've been hearing good things about Bel-Air.
It's really good. Let me say this. I watched the first episode because apparently so many people, because with Peacock, you watch the first episode with a trial, then you have to upgrade. And apparently, because I ended up having to call Amazon, apparently Peacock is having issues with the upgrade. Like you can upgrade your subscription, but then it'll just say it's pending. And I think it's because so many people, because when I called Amazon, he was like, you're watching Bel-Air, right? Like he knew. Like, so I think there's so many people were trying to upgrade last week that it just wasn't working. So I haven't even checked yet to see if it actually went through so I could watch the rest of the episodes. But the way they turn the comedy on its head, but still kept like it's really like an inverse universe but still updated it, still kept some elements of the more comedic references, but made all the shit more serious. I just feel like it works really fucking well. I feel like it works well. Yeah.
What you watching, Inka?
Have you watched it, Inka?
Yeah, I'm all caught up. I love it. I love what they're doing with the Hillary character on the show. It's so
I hate
dope.
The Carlton character though.
Carlton.
He also looks really Nigerian to me.
the actor who plays Carlton is kind of in on the joke, and
people are calling him like social media going ham on
all this or whatever. And he's like, if you gonna call me ugly, at least do it with an HD picture, guys. Like, here you go. So I really like that actor, but I think it's brilliant. The latest episode is really good. They give Aunt Viv some layers that I was not expecting. They did a good job. They knocked it out of the park for me. What else am I watching? I don't know. Nothing. I watched the Genius episode 2.
Oh, Kanye.
Yeah.
What'd you think? I was gonna bring that up. What'd you think about it?
That footage is unbelievable, man. Yeah. I don't know how we got here with Kanye, but I understand that the level of delusion needed to get out your dreams sometimes.
Yeah.
And like having a mom that truly believes in you from her gut is an incredible thing to watch and to see. So
somebody said to me earlier this week that, and it kind of made, obviously I'm not qualified to make this fucking, suggestion or whatever, but somebody said to me, they wouldn't be surprised if they found out that Kanye was lightly on the spectrum. Because he's
I'm sure he has.
Yeah. I think there's neurodiversity up in there somehow.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I'm not qualified.
He's definitely neurodivergent. He's 100% neurodivergent. So wait, I think it's ADD because I think it's because ADD and bipolar can go hand in hand, and treating one does not necessarily treat the other. I think it's ADD along with ADD combined with being an only child. Basically, that's what I think. Because I have the same shit, except I pledged, which made me humble myself. If you have never done, if you are only child and you have never, and you have always been told you're gifted and talented, and you never play group sports, never pledge a fraternity or sorority, if you never have to think in a week,
or join the army,
you can tell the difference in the only children who grew up and had to participate in some kind of like group dynamic and think about people other than themselves, which for me was what pledging did for me, and those who never had to fucking do that shit. Like, you can absolutely see the difference.
Yeah, but this kind of episode was I mean, Kuni just did a great job with this documentary. It's just well done, and it shows, obviously this part is about the success of College Dropout. And finally, what he did to get Rockefeller to finally put the shit out, because
I didn't realize that a lot of that was just Dame not wanting to put him out at all.
I've never talked to Dame about this, but I get the feeling that Dame and Jay and Biggs had an image of Rockefeller artists in their head, and obviously he did not fit that image at all, and so they didn't quite know what to do. I think they knew he was talented, but they didn't know what to do with him. He wasn't dressing like them. He wasn't Beanie Sigel. He wasn't Petey Crack. He wasn't Freeway and so on and so on. So they didn't quite know what to do, and so it shows Kanye forcing their hand by putting out Through the Wire and making a video on his own and just kind of keep pushing Jay-Z to put him on a record on,
Blueprint 2.
Blueprint 2 album, yeah, and all that type of shit. And Kanye, to his credit, calling Dame out, like when he did the video, the premiere, he's like, maybe this will get you to open my budget. Because Dame did the fuck shit where he signed Kanye,
but didn't
open the budget. So he's like, I'm signed, but I can't get you guys to give me 5 cents to even do a photo shoot for headshots.
So he's like stealing studio time from other artists and literally recording stuff in Jamie Foxx's house.
Yeah. He's like going to Pharrell and like, yo, Pharrell got an 8-hour block. He said I could use like the last 20 minutes to work and shit like that. Yeah. He's like, and even when they did the documentary, Cootie, I think at that point was working up in MTV. So he would go to MTV like late at night and edit the video, like when nobody was around. It was just Robin Peter to pay Paul.
Chike
worked at MTV, that's right. Robin Peter to pay Paul, but obviously it all worked out. But then it also shows, like, obviously with the success, the biggest, and I forgot how many that the album had gotten 10 Grammy nominations. I forgot even how big that album was, 4 million. It's actually his biggest selling album ever. And actually, I was surprised with that. I thought maybe Graduation.
It was Late Registration.
Yeah, or maybe 808s clipped it, but College Dropout is still his big selling album of all time. And you know, but also kind of the show, like, as that ascent into that stardom and superstardom happened, more and more people started to fall away. Like in,
yeah,
in
like him not taking Cootie
on the tour. Yeah, and Cootie's like, Kanye went on tour and he didn't take me. I was like, damn, like this, we've been in the trenches, like, you know. And how there was an interesting part when, very telling part to me, when Kanye says the Cootie who's shot through the wire, the video's massive, blah. I think Cootie and Chike did All Falls Down video as well. And again, that was great. And he's having a conversation with him. And, you know, in front of people, too. It's not even a one-on-one shit, bro. He's like, yo, you know I love you niggas, man, but y'all can't shoot Jesus Walks.
Yeah, he's like, we got to get hyped, like, Jesus Walks.
Gotta get hyped to do that, man. And Cootie's like, what? Like, nigga, like...
Cootie was like, here's what's going to happen. You're going to get hyped or some other big director to do it. They're not going to get your vision. You're going to call me to come fix it.
And that's exactly what happened
with the Jesus Walks video. The Cootie video is the one that they shot third, and the one that they went with.
Yeah, but you
kind of third. I just wanted to say that again. Fucking, I'm sorry. The marketing person and me who controls budgets just came out. Fucking, if you know how much money that is. Okay, that's it. I just
three videos.
My woo. Okay, sorry.
But you just see that. You just see that kind of separation, like the people are like not around as much, and like a lot of the people from the first part aren't around at all, you know, they're like gone. And you know, Cootie was one of the last people, like, you know, Monopoly's kind of in and out, and you know, some people, but like, it's just a lot of people kind of falling away, and he's hanging out with Puff and he's hanging out with Pharrell, and he's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you kind of see it. So but Cootie says at the end of this part, they thought this was it, like this was supposed to be the end of the whole documentary. Because then he didn't talk to Cootie for like, they didn't speak for like 10, 12 years.
But then all this other crazy shit happened.
Exactly. So that's what we're going to get in part three. That was great. Bro, were you watching anything?
I've been watching this new show on Oxygen. It's basically called New York Homicide. It's like it's like one of those ID kind of shows where they deal with homicides in New York that were just kind of like high profile and shit like that. So it's always, I always find it interesting to watch those shows with the actual detectives that have, you know, been on those cases and kind of what they did and, you know, where you got like a weird thing happened and that's how you broke the case open or something like that. So that's been pretty interesting. Other than that, I'm just watching basic stuff. I meant to say too, I don't know if you guys watch Home Economics. It's a show on ABC. It's actually a really good show, man. It's really kind of, you can clearly tell they're trying to duplicate some level of Modern Family with the sort of interwoven relationships. It's not quite Modern Family, right? But it is a really, really good show. What else have I been? I mean, Snowfall premiered, so I watched both episodes.
It was
solid. You know, I mean, I've always got questions about some of this stuff, but what they did was they actually started with Lynn Bias's death, and it is clearly it's really used as a. It was very weird, right? Because I saw people really thinking that's what happened. Like, Lynn Bias got the coke that killed him from Franklin Saint. And I'm like, guys, this is literally a television show. Like, this is TV in every way, shape, and form. Like,
why ain't Franklin based in LA?
Yes, but that's...
And Lynn Bias is based in DC, Maryland.
But what I'm trying to say is that they were using that as a tool to show the line of demarcation between how the drug war really took another level after Bias' death.
Okay, okay.
Because up until 86, how it was enforced was very different. And they kind of show that, right? Like, they basically showed the next scene, one of the next scenes is like LAPD basically kicking in someone's door and like accosting a family, and the kid had a fucking nickel bag in his drawer, right? Like, it was just a ridiculous extreme level of enforcement to get numbers and to make arrests, and the war on drugs and Nancy Reagan and all of these things that came with it. Mm. So you can see that they're setting up the context of the things that will happen next. And also, it's 1986, and we all know, because we kind of lived through that, that we know the basis of the basis of the series is Iran-Contra, right? Like, we know yeah. that we know that at some point, I believe in 87, that kind of stops. So we know that there's a short window here. But, you know, it was interesting. It's TV, not the end of the world. I'm still very fascinated on how they don't really address gangs, like, at all.
That'd be important. In 86 in L.A., that's impossible.
So I find it very interesting how Leon is kind of like able to basically run this territory and not be affiliated with a gang in L.A. in 1986.
Yes.
I just find that I find that difficult to believe. So, yeah. But, you know, it's TV.
Yeah. It's TV. Yeah, yeah.
I forgot to say one thing I'm watching.
I was just going to say something Sean said. I don't know if I ever brought this up in here. For anybody who's missing Modern Family, there's a show, I think it's on Hulu or Prime. It's called Life in Pieces, which was on CBS, which I had never heard about before the pandemic.
I feel like we mentioned this.
Yeah, you brought it up.
Once a month.
Okay, I just had to bring it up again. I'm about to rewatch that shit. It's so fucking funny. It's like Modern Family on cable. It's even though it wasn't on cable, it's hilarious. I just wanted to bring that up. Okay. I got to evangelize work because this is one of the best shows I discovered. Ever.
I want to say,
I think it's four seasons. It's an easy watch. But I watched this show on Amazon Prime called As We See It, and it's about three 20-something adult roommates who are on the autism spectrum, and they have an aide that comes, and it's about them.
Is it fictional, or is it?
It's fictional.
It is fictional. I wasn't sure.
The actors are autists.
Okay, okay.
So it is incredible. Of course, it's emotional. Because for obvious reasons, but
shout out to Young
Ivy.
She's making her presence known. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, she knows.
We hear you, Ivy. We hear you.
But check it out if you get some time. If you liked what was the show with the guy on Netflix who has autism?
Oh, I'm blanking on the title, but I know what you're talking about.
Where he was like navigating his dating life and all of that and going to college and that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
then watch this. I really, really loved it.
Okay. Mostly just say peace to Abbott Elementary, which is like becoming everybody's favorite show now. The ratings are
I think it just passed Modern Family's ABC ratings record. Yep. It gets better every week.
This week was awesome.
Favorite character, the janitor.
Oh, the janitor. I take over the entertainment. And also how they're so smart in how they're doing the writing, because they keep subtly unpeeling like layers. Like this week how they did with Ava. Like we saw Ava wasn't just the clowny, like slick talking jokey. Like we saw the thing with her and her grandmother who looks like she has dementia, and she's taking care of that, and she's, got a little part while she went on vacation, and she's out so much, not because she'd be in the streets, because she has a grandmother she takes care of. Like, it's just so subtle how they, last week or week before, Jacob was gay, but it wasn't even nothing.
Right.
It was just like, oh, I got a break. It wasn't like, oh my God. It was just like, or how Gregory's from Baltimore. And like, they just kind of do these things.
And like Greg's father not approving of him being a dad.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's funny as shit. On top of that, it's funny as shit. So it's a great show. So definitely want to give that props. Euphoria. This is the finale coming up this week. I thought last week's episode was very dense. But brilliant with the because it was throwing me at first, because it was about obviously the play, which is showing Lexi's perspective.
It was everybody's background. Yeah.
But from Lexi's perspective.
Right.
So, with a Hollywood budget.
With a Hollywood.
No, I was like, who's paying for this shit? And somebody argued that they felt like the production really wasn't that big. And I was like, no, what? I think, no, meaning they thought that Lexi was imagining it. And I was like, no, because we would have had to tell. We would have seen the bare bones. We would have seen the bare bones at some point if it wasn't meant to be real. I was like, think about like the Chicago courtroom scene. We would have seen the bare bones at some point. But like, I was like, what school? They don't even go to private school. Like, what school is
there? And this is the wild thing. Not only that, but there was no adult supervision.
None. She was
there was a drama teacher overseeing it. It was just Lexi. It was like, there's no
teacher. Literally was just like, I want to put on a play. They was like,
and I'm going to do it all. Like, there's no teacher.
Who's choreographing this shit? Well, who did the costume? So that was hilarious. I always watch the after show, which is really interesting to me, but I have to interject for a minute, and I done forgot her name already, to mention that I just realized that the chick who plays Cassie was in The Handmaid's Tale, was in fucking
White Lotus too, right?
White Lotus was in
Sydney Sweeney.
Sydney Sweeney was the voyeur. I think I recognized her in The Voyeurs. But like, there's something else I see her in, but Handmaid's Tale and White Lotus, her character, so like, she plays similar. She always plays somebody who's really neurotic and slightly obsessive, right? And she does it really well. And her characters are always standouts, and I just never connected the dots between them. And I'm like, how did I not do that? I guess, I'm actually sad that this is the finale coming up. Like, I know it has to be, but like, but to your point about the background, I forgot that Lexi and Rue were supposed to be best friends. I had forgotten all about that.
Yeah.
So much happens every single week.
Yeah.
Exactly. Rue's so deep into drug addiction that, you know, and Lexi's not.
They barely talk to each other now.
I
think the scene that has stuck with me from the last episode was Leslie, Rue's mom. Yeah. On the bed, having that matter-of-fact conversation with her.
They wanted to see Black Mom. Everybody kept saying, where's the Black Mom?
There she goes.
Well, she gave me Black Mom last week.
You want a Black Mom? Like, Black Mom here now.
You're about to be 18. You want to kill yourself? I really can't be a part of it anymore. Yeah. I got to be a crackhead.
She was like, I can do all the drugs you want. Drew was like, really? She was like,
I was like, I feel like this is a trap.
If losing one daughter and losing two, I'm going to fight to save Gia.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because now you're taking everything from me.
That had to take a lot to get to. Yeah. I have a friend whose son, drugs weren't involved that she knows of, but he was in this space where he was just determined to rebel. And one of her kids is on the spectrum. And between the oldest one being determined to rebel and the youngest one being on the spectrum, the middle child was really getting lost. He was doing shit like, you know, suggesting to his teachers that he was getting abused. And, you know, so now they're under investigation for CPS, you know, like it was just, and he was being really kind of sociopathic because he was lying to his therapist as well, right? Like in a really scary way. And she was like, I don't want to let him go, but I feel like I got to let him go. He came back around. It took like a year or so, but like, she was really fighting with that. She was like, he is destroying. She was like, my marriage is crumbling because of this, you know? Like, she was like, because I still have compassion and my husband is like, get the fuck out of my house, you know? So I can't imagine what it takes as a parent to be like, I go with God. Like, I don't know what else to tell you, for real.
But it was, I thought the play, you know, was brilliant, kind of going back and forth. It also showed, because you kind of forget how the depth of Maddie and Cassie's friendship was.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of forget it. Now, which is why Maddie is so over the top about what Cassie did, because like, yo, you held me down when I was fucked up. Like, she lived with them.
And also, you know how much a piece of shit this man is.
Yeah.
Like, you understand he's a complete piece of shit.
And he treated her like a piece of shit, like as he kicked her out of his crib. So like, it was a great episode. Like I said, this week's finale is going to be some other shit. Everybody's trying to predict what happens with Fez and Ash and them. I first thought that, because there's a quick clip of like Fez being like held on the ground while something's happening. And then my first thought was obviously because this Custer guy is working with the cops.
Yeah, we also see the cops busting in.
Yeah, but then
they did show the cops busting in somewhere.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, okay. They showed the cops kicking in somewhere.
Because Kelly, friend to the show, predicts that that has something to do with Lori because of the drugs. But, you know, I don't know. We're gonna see this week.
I feel like maybe Ash is gonna get shot.
I heard
like,
that. I think Ash gonna kill Custer.
That's what I'm about to say. I feel like Ash is gonna pull something out on dude. The police are gonna hear it. That's gonna be their cue to move in because they're not because Fez isn't even trying to talk about no drug shit right now. He's
trying to get to the play.
So, yeah. But Ash saw them whispering,
mm-hmm.
and Ash's face was like, "Fuck these niggas doing right." Yeah. So we already know how he moves. He doesn't want to pick
the box cutter up under his shit. Like,
yeah, he doesn't pick some up.
And he's just staring at old boy. Like, now you're talking to him. He's like staring at him. Like, what the fuck is he doing?
So I think Ash is gonna do something that's gonna cue the cops to move in. I think Ash is gonna get killed, and I think you know cops are gonna hold him down because the thing with Ash is that he's such an intense dude, little dude. How do you grow an arc like Ash? Like how do you grow a story arc like Ash without it taking over everything? You know what I'm saying? Because he's so much, which I love. Like he's so much as a character, but like. It almost is like something drastic has to happen to him.
I hope not, but we're gonna see Sunday. Yeah. But again, great show, great episode. Piece of Kiki Wyatt, child 11. It was one of 11, and she was born in the '30s on a farm. That's when you have 11 kids when you need workers to. To grow your crops.
You got to tend to them fields before school, baby.
Exactly. And after school.
Yeah, man.
That's when you got 11 kids. You don't got 11 kids up in the house.
Well, I just find it not interesting, right? But like, I mean, listen, obviously, I do want to be conscious of the fact that there are women who cannot have children, right? And
yes,
so
yes,
for someone to be able to have 11 children, 11 you know 11 pregnancies, and you know God bless her.
Yeah, they ain't even no twins.
That's what I found. Usually, there's at least one set of twins.
My mom's sisters is twins. She
been pregnant for like 10 years of her life.
No, she's been pregnant literally like 50% of her adult life is literally with child, and it seems to not stop her. So again, God bless. Go forth and prosper. And that is only being said from the fact that when I imagine 9 people, because I'm assuming she has a couple of children that are out of the house now.
I'm assuming.
But like, I'm always, whenever I hear a number like that, the first thing I go to is how long does that gallon of milk last? Literally. From the time it
breakfast. What is your refrigerator like?
How does the egg situation work here? Right? Because I know big fella getting 3. Yeah. Right? We know
off top.
You know, dad getting 3 off top.
Off top.
So now we split 9 between like 13 motherfuckers.
Word.
So
how you know what they're doing? They're taking the bacon and they're chopping it up into small pieces and shit like that.
We add a little water, put a little milk in that. Like, how does that work? Like, I cook for a family, right? A family of 4, right? Like I could not imagine a nightly dinner of needing to feed 11 people. Like, fam, there's no pot big enough to fit on your stove. Yeah. To stew enough chicken to feed 11 motherfuckers, man.
We just talked about this with the Jacksons. That's so much food.
My thing is, why are you having, and I mean, I'm saying this facetiously because obviously anybody's decision to procreate is their own. But my thing is, there's no logical reason to have 11 children in 2022. The reason our grandparents
is a new husband.
The reason our grandparents
wants to have a baby together with him. His husband.
Whatever.
So the reason our grandparents had all the kids
is because they have farms to work and they had no birth control. So my thing is like, you ain't got no labor that you need these children to tend to. Like, they literally having kids with labor. Like, and they would get the kids out of the house as soon as possible so that they didn't have to handle the cost of those mouths anymore, right?
So is this kid by the husband? Is this the first one with this current husband?
So I believe so. I think they've only been married for like 18 months or 2 years. Oh, yeah.
I know her older kids are sick of her shit because
I am almost positive that
parentification is heavy up in that.
Yeah, My thing is this, like, and again, I'm going to get it from the dude perspective. God bless each his own. I just can't wrap my mind around. I met this woman. She has 10 children. A couple of the children are still really young. Like, really young. It's like a 2-year-old. They're young kids. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going in. I'm wifing her. And I'm going to have some kids with her, too. I don't understand
that thought process.
I'm just like, what Sean said, who's paying for all this food?
I do think that she is very pointed and very clear with her intentions when she marries men. They are like, this isn't a surprise. Like, no one,
right.
Like, homeboy doesn't come to the crib and is like, oh shit, there's Legos on the floor, right?
Like, it's not Bay Bay's kids where it's like, I showed up, like, and she had four more kids. It's not that.
Yeah, it's not that. And I think that these are usually conversations that I think that are like had, like, listen, these are my terms, my nigga. Like, you're going to marry me. Okay. And we're going to have a baby and you're going to be a responsible and present husband. Right. Like, those are my deal terms. Is you with it or is you ain't? Clearly, there is no shortage of suitors. There are no shortage of suitors.
Well,
gentlemen, friends are knocking on the door.
I'm going to keep it raw. I'm going to keep it raw here. And this is just me talking. I promise you, Kiki's sex game is bonkers. Because Kiki is...
All right. Good night, everyone.
Kiki is getting niggas to... you got 10 kids and niggas are still letting off. Kiki's sex game is probably phenomenal.
Why are you like
the views here are solely that of Jeffrey Sledge and not that of the Pop Life Podcast.
How do you not have a great sex game if you had
the do we need to discuss that?
I think that's another reason she gets niggas to stay.
I mean,
I don't think they don't stay.
What marriage is this for her? They don't actually stay. Don't actually stay. She's on her third marriage.
I think she comes with terms, and I think men are willing to adhere to those terms
until they don't work.
And I think that there's a type for both of them, and I think that they find those types. And I don't think that she is the type of person that she's like, look, I'm with child, I'm having this baby, and this is my, you know, womanly sort of duty when, you know, if I'm pregnant, right? Like, this is kind of what I do.
It's what I do.
And also, Jeff,
I don't know her.
Some men, or at least in theory, they like the idea of playing dad, stepping up and playing dad when there's not a father present.
Okay.
If the woman is going to position them as such, like, you're the head of this household now, that can make some men, it's not everybody, but some men actually really love that shit. Or at least for a little while, right? Like, some men really actually embrace and love that shit. Like,
I won't play daddy for 10 kids who ain't mine.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that there's a very specific type, and she finds those very specific types.
Yeah,
and, you know, obviously I don't know that husband, but I think her last husband, you know, these are usually sort of Christian-based guys. You know, very, 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 I don't want to say very religious, but they're clearly Christian-based. Yes. I'll use that term.
All right. Yeah, so peace. And God bless you, Kiki, and I hope you have a safe and happy pregnancy and a beautiful, safe and healthy child.
It could just be simpler than that. She could just really love children and really love being pregnant.
The old lady lived in a shoe.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I don't think this is as complicated as me I think neither. It's a very simple thing. I think she enjoys that part. I think she feels very connected to that part of you know, being a woman and being able
some
to
women do love children. That.
Mm-hmm. And
there's
and,
really
and
nothing I, better than the baby stage. I mean, it's hell, but it's perfect hell.
Listen, I've always said if you could be like up until like 6 months and then just skip from like 6 months to like three, I'm good.
We good can to go.
From 6 months to three, nigga. Oh my god.
Yeah, you like I'm eyes bloodshot red, cranky. Everybody mad at each
there's
other.
Literally
all the time.
No control.
Zero I'm out here. So I'm just if I'm due, I'm definitely going just I'm just going to take the 2 year old. Like the 2 year old is now mine.
It's mine. Yeah, yeah.
We gonna start that too.
Yeah, that 12 year old. I don't know where you going.
18 months. Get the fuck out of my face.
And just got to mention to close the show because I've been trying to file, but so many moving parts. You know, with this Russia attacking and taking over the Ukraine. And seeming to start World War III.
Let's not throw World War III out.
Okay, well, yeah, because no one has to Biden, but what's scary, Biden is definitely being you know, controlled and not jumping out the window like your man wouldn't have done anything to Putin, but
no.
But what's scary is that Russia and China seem to be on one accord, and that's scary because that's too
it's scary. Powerful. But
I don't think she wants to blow up the world either.
Right. The only reason I'm saying let's not throw World War III out there is there's a couple of reasons. The first thing is, and Inga, if at any point I'm speaking on turn, you know, let me know. Because I've been trying to process this and process how to react to it over the past couple of days. So the first thing is, I think all of us here on the pod, and Inga, I think you do on some level too. We remember the first Cold War, right? So this could be a Cold War situation. This could not even go that far because the Cold War lasted like over a decade. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and Ukraine is not part of NATO yet, even though obviously, you know, NATO is coming to Ukraine's defense because they want to keep Russia in check. But, and you know, we know that there, you know, has been movement from the U.S. already to go and support. But I was like, shit, is this, I was like that too, like, shit, is this about to be World War III? And I was like, let me check myself a little bit in saying that out loud and throwing that term out there out loud, only because, you know, this shit is definitely like scary and unprecedented, and the U.S.'s involvement in anything that's as close as Europe is really frightening.
Yeah.
But you know, we don't know. But also,
things are changing literally by the fucking minute.
And there also is like the school of thought that like this is gonna be what actually, you know, undoes Putin and his leadership and his regime. I don't know about that either. You know, so it's like, so they occupy Kiev this morning or last night for us, I guess. And the president of Ukraine spoke this morning, and it was really kind of a moment of shock because homie's in a t-shirt. Like, he's not in no suit and tie. He's not like looking like no kind of government. If your man's was in a t-shirt, like, yo, my family's still here, I'm still here. You know, he's like, I've talked to 22 European countries, I've asked if we're going to be admitted into NATO, everybody's scared, nobody wants to give me a straight answer, you know. So it's like
people are like over there, the Ukrainian people are like walking to Poland.
Yeah, they're literally walking to Poland.
Like, I'm just to get away. Like, it's chaotic, man. But the, you know, the Ukrainian people are like a proud people, and they definitely don't have the muscle to fight off Russia. But like, they going out swinging. They like, yo, we're gonna take some. Like, they're going. I saw today that Vladimir Klitschko and I forget his brother's name. Damn. They talking about going over there. Yeah, Vitaly. They told him I'm going back over there to fight.
Yeah.
That
I mean, you know, then I don't think it's gonna happen, but I think they both did stints in the army over there because I think
well, I think most of those men of their age group had to do like 2 years or whatever. It was very much like like Korea. Like once you turn, you have to do your military service. So listen, they're not gonna be like completely lost if they need to go out into the field, but I highly doubt that they're going to have such prominent people. This is the equivalent to Joe Louis going to World War II. Okay, not in any
Elvis in the
right,
army.
like nobody's putting them in the trench, and it's really kind of sad because, I mean, to see CNN reported 137 deaths of soldiers within literally 24 hours, dude, like 24 hours.
Yeah.
To see the fear and to see this sort of real tension that people are feeling in real time is sort of very raw. Like we are very used to sort of footage of our wars sort of being tamed and it's a very nasty business.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until maybe you started to see some unedited shit from Vietnam that you were like, oh, this was fucking insane over here.
And that's what finally changed the public sentiment.
And it's interesting to me. Two things I want to say. Number one is please, please, please check your news sources. People are recirculating old clips of, you know, American generals speaking about previous things.
Photos from like Israel and Syria.
Russia is incredibly masterful at manipulating American media, as we saw in the 2016 election.
Absolutely.
That's firstly. Secondly, it's going to be interesting to watch this play out because we didn't have social media during the last large American conflict. So to see people, you know, TikToks of people live in Ukraine trying to like fill up their cars with gas and showing empty grocery stores and things like that. Like it's really giving you a front row seat to what war means to civilians, which I think is eye opening. And hopefully people will stop dick riding your man Trump and understand that like him being incompetent is what got us here in the first place.
And also
incompetent and a plug for Putin doing Putin's dirty work.
And also, Inca, what war means, and I want to put this in the context and just say, for some people, they need to see what war looks like in a place that hasn't been war torn for so long that you just expect it to look like rubble, right? Exactly. They need to see what war looks like for some place that looks familiar-ish, looks relatable, and people who look familiar and relatable. It's like the Cat Williams joke about how they'd be like, we killed, you know, how many insurgents? He'd be like, I don't even know no insurgents. But it's different when, you know, it's like, oh, these are white people who look like, you know, me. I mean, and I'm talking about the Trump supporters and or, you know, anybody else who kind of doesn't understand. I do think that there's two things though. This idea, the one thing about social media is that there's this idea that we can tweet America's engagement away, right? Like hashtag it away, rhetoric it away. And I'm like, the Joint Chiefs of Staff do not give a fuck what we're taught. Like, this shit has been in the works. Like, by the time we send somebody somewhere, this conversation has been going on for so much longer.
By the time y'all know that we sent somebody somewhere, like, it has been gone on.
They're not checking Twitter. Like, what's Black Twitter think about this?
Like, y'all really, I understand that Trump would move by Twitter, but like, do y'all not understand how fucking intelligence works? We're not supposed to know everything that fucking is going on. And, you know, one person said to me, she was like, Biden's acting like we don't have a choice. And I was like, here's the thing. If NATO squads up, we got to squad up. That's the agreement. Like, it's an alliance. This is the agreement that we made. It's fucking the Avengers. If fucking Tony Stark says everybody get it, we got to get it. You know, so it's like, and that's the closest comparison I can use. I'm not saying we're going to save the fucking world. But this is what America does. This is our brand. This is why we sit at the table. Because motherfuckers call us and say, hey, big military homie, we need your help.
You got a problem.
That's what the fuck we do. Whether you like it or not, that's who, that's our role as superpower. We are the military force. So am I wrong on that, Inka? Is that an accurate description?
That is accurate. America has the greatest military force in the world.
Yeah. In the fucking world.
And most of it's saying so many civilians now are in
China has more number. They have more number. But we apparently between they have more people than us, I think, by like triple or something like that.
I think we're up there with China. Like not in sheer numbers, but in mobility and power.
Yeah.
We are supposed to still I think it's us then China then I can't remember who's third, but we're
also nobody is drafting you niggas. Okay.
Yeah.
Chinese wings and drink. Lean. Nobody is coming to your job or to your mother's basement engaged. To force you to anybody's front line.
We've been engaged in active combat for 20 years. The military has numbers. The last time we had a draft, it was because we were coming off a war, going into another war, and motherfuckers was dead, tired. You know, I mean, it's like we've been engaged in war for 20 years. Like, they got numbers, y'all.
Yeah, and enlistment will absolutely go up if we are involved in this in any way. That is what happens. Yeah. People come out and they the Proud Boys want to do this. They're waiting for stuff like this.
They want to get go, right. Let them go do
there
that.
There is no draft that's happening in 2022. Everybody, please relax.
Yeah, and also I'm reading that there's so many people in Kiev are now living down in the subways. Because they're using the subways as basically bomb shelters.
That's the one place we're behind in the last Cold War is that, there is the technology that everybody has this time around was scary to me, but at least the last time there were like 200,000 plus bomb shelters in civilian homes in the 60s. We ain't got those no more. I've been on a mission like how many of those are left in architecture since Trump took office, frankly, because I'm like we need to bring
if you look at TikTok and home improvement YouTube the way I do, you'll see that there are people very much still
they
building
have safe
kind of sheds
yeah
under their houses in the backyard. Yeah.
I don't know anything about military strategy or anything like that, but I'll obviously be dead wrong. But I kind of feel like what I've read, and you know, everything's propaganda, so who knows how real it is, but they're saying, kind of like what we were saying about Kanye earlier, like a lot of Vlad's inner circle has gone away. They don't really, they've either left or they, you know, maybe some of them died or whatever, but he has his inner circle has shrunk and he only has, you know, yes men around him pretty much. Nobody's telling him no. And I kind of feel like I guess Russia's total GDP is $1 trillion. So a country of that size, they're actually a very poor country. I mean, the oligarchs and Vlad and them have robbed the country blind. And they have all this personal wealth, but the actual GDP of Russia is very low as compared to the other air quote superpowers around the world. Even the other countries that even aren't superpowers. Their GDP is very low. So Vlad is, I think Vlad might be overplaying his hand here because he ain't really got the money to do this. Like, so if they start squeezing, what he has is oil. He has oil resources that people still buy from Russia because you need oil for gas and so on and so on. But besides that, he don't have cash on hand. I think he could, in the long term, be overplaying his hand when sanctions start to squeeze because they ain't got the reserves.
People would also say that might push him. And again, I know we're not trying to get into military strategy. People might also argue that will push him to do something very rash.
To wild out, yeah.
Concern is them, I'll be honest, my concern is them getting possession of Chernobyl. Which right now is still very much a threat. It just hasn't been touched. It's been protected. It's been covered. But even though you can walk through Chernobyl now and it's safe, all it takes is for somebody to, you know, lift the lid on that shit. And because we were like a week out from the whole half the fucking world being wiped out, literally, with that as it was. So because had that shit hit the water supply, we would have been fucked. So that's my concern when we start talking about like the nuclear shit. And I do think this is also something that like people who were old enough in the 80s to remember the incessant to remember the arms race and remember the incessant talk about nuclear war, nuclear powers, nuclear threats, nuclear whatever. I think we have a different position on this because I noticed that we seem to be the ones who are genuinely concerned about what might happen, how we might be impacted on the home front. Whereas I feel like younger people are more like, you guys, nothing's going to happen to us. We need to be concerned about Ukraine. And it's like, I'm concerned about Ukraine. I'm also concerned about how this impacts us right here.
Well, it's fucking America, on the stock market.
That's natural for sure. To fucking do.
It's fucking on the stock market right now, and it's going to drive gas prices through the fucking roof this summer.
And but, they were already going to go up anyway.
Yeah, so we're going to see. You got anything to say about that, bro? Before we check out?
Nah, I don't really have much to add.
All right, cool. All right, well, that's it, man. We ended up having a full show talking shit.
Yep,
talking shit. This is what we do.
Shit. That's
talking shit, show.
Talking the old niggas.
Old niggas. Old niggas talking shit.
What's that gal name? I forget her name.
We on somebody's front porch in a glider swing.
You should go out with us. What's up, boy? Did you go out with
Oh, that. I just wanted to add this one last thing. There is this. As we're closing, there is this woman. I need to find her name. On TikTok and Reels, who basically plays everybody's black mama.
Oh, yeah. Shay. Her name is Shay something.
And
yeah,
she did the awesome one that was about my mom explaining how people are kin to us. And she's like, so Ernestine's grandmother and my grandmother, they were sisters. So that makes me and Ernestine and Abilene, what's that?
So like, my mom,
I was like, "This is my fucking
she's amazing.
Family."
She's amazing. She got one. She got one.
Remember, Miss Sealy used to watch y'all.
Shay has one of those skits. She'd be like, "You don't remember me? I know you're just a little baby." But she has one now with the mother who gets the call from school because the son is hiding the report cards and all that
right,
shit.
Right.
She just nails that shit like the whole rocking and the robe, she's so good.
She has another one that's like, you want me to download a Cash application and give them my bank information so that you can send some money to my Cash application and I'm supposed to get that to my bank? Have you lost your mind? Like, the shit is so, she's so good. So I just wanted to say shout out to her because that clip, and she did a clip that was like everybody's house at Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's the classic one. And the woman when black people take so long to leave, you ever say that?
Yes.
That's the classic shit. In the car, still talking. But so we're going to wrap it up on that. Y'all stay safe out there. Stay prayed up. Stay prayed up and eat your vegetables.
Keep your gas tank above half.
Drink plenty of water.
Mind your business.
Mind your business,
and just find something to distract you from the bull.
Exactly.
That's all. Yeah. All right,
we'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.